Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to Fish Tank Live, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt here, live from the Casabella Design Group studios. It's a little loud in the back here, Juice, it's a little loud, so I apologize. It's windy out here in South Florida.
Nasty weather today. The weather is nasty,
but my crew is not. As always, I'm joined by the man with the best hands in the live podcast business. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice, it's starting to feel like home again here. I was starting to feel like a little disoriented.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to figure out how you know who's nasty and who's not nasty in this crew. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know what type of
we were just having off air.
Got it. All right. Yeah. Nah, this crew right here,
man. That was a fine and nasty too, I guess.
Great crew right here, Big Seth, man. It's good that you're looking good in the studio over there, man. Alvaro's got it looking nice for you over there, bro.
Yeah, he always does it right. I mean, that's what Casabella Design Group does.
My question to you is this: like the first day, you had a nice charcuterie board and everything. You getting snacks and stuff still, or did he cut you off?
I might have been cut off. I just too much Chad Van Horn. And didn't get enough
snack. Right. Gotta cut back. The salary cap hit him. Okay, all right.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. But now that we've put the pressure on, I bet you Alvaro, next time it'll be a feast in here. It'll be an absolute feast. So you hear the chuckles and the laughs, and obviously if you're watching now, we don't have Chad Van Horn, at least not yet. He might make an appearance. As always, Juice and I are joined by the legendary Savak, our Emmy-adjacent producer, and back in the saddle. Oh, wait, is that Bandit? That.
Yeah, that's Bandit.
Oh, Bandit, if you've listened to a recent episode of Fin Condition, Bandit makes an appearance to wrap up the show, which we're grateful for right. Bandit.
Oh, yeah. We call that the Hey Nick appearance.
Like, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And it has been a minute, as they say, but the people have been asking, and he has answered. The Sun Sentinel columnist and, of course, the host of Dolphins Deep Dive with Perk, because you can't have Deep Dive with Perk without Perk. He is Chris Perkins, and we've got him back as well. Perk, rocking his fish tank.
Represent. Represent, Perk.
Look at that, baby. Hey, let me just say this. Seth got me to judge the Jason Taylor Poetry Slam, Louder Than a Bomb. I was out there on Thursday It was one of the best things I've ever done. I'll say that.
Wow.
And here's why. Here's why. Because, you know, you always, as an older person, you always hear the youth, they're screwed up and they don't have any focus. When I do things like this, or when I go to the NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists Job Fair, when I judge high school journalism contests, it reassures me, nah, these kids have got it. There was some very intelligent stuff, some raw stuff, some well thought out stuff out there that I saw. I believe in the youth of America once again.
Wow.
Jason Taylor, dude, that thing was on point. Let me tell you, it was faith assuring right there. I have faith in the youth. Thank you for inviting me out there, Seth.
Let me piggyback on that real quick, Big Seth, because Perk and I were talking about before we got on the air, man. And
we did.
Yeah, LTAB, Florida, man, with Seth and Blue Apple Poetry have going on, man. It's just special with the Jason Taylor Foundation. And it's so funny. I sat beside a couple newbies, you know, when I judged this on Tuesday as well. I don't know what Thursday you were at, Perk, but I thought I saw you on Tuesday, but it's okay. It's okay. I got you, dog. I got you.
Tomorrow,
I did say, I got you, dog. I got you, Perk. I did. Thank you. I did say Thursday.
Forecasting the future, how good it's going to be tomorrow. But, but yeah, I mean, it was so much incredible stuff, and I knew what to expect, and I still didn't bring my tissue or my handkerchief, you know what I mean? Because there are some amazing poets out there that are telling their stories, and I knew they were going to get me, Perk. You know what I mean? I knew that I was going to be emotional at some point, and I hit Seth up, like, right away afterwards, and I was like, Big Seth, man, there's this group from Flanagan that I've got to hear their group piece again because it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
A couple of the young ladies there were absolutely incredible. A couple of the gentlemen there were absolutely incredible. So I echo what you're saying, man. The way they can put their words to paper and then articulate it out to us, and we feel every single word they're talking about, man. It was so, so incredible, man. And, you know, every year, Seth, you know, I do it every year for Seth, but I do it for myself too, man, because I want to hear what these kids have to say. And every year, Perk, and you'll see this when you come back next year, because I got him locked in for Seth already for next year. There'll be some other current topic or some other new story that they're going to be talking about, and they're so on point about bringing it to light, man. So yeah, it's so much fun, man. And you know, it's always a great thing to go listen to these kids speak. And like you said, Perk, man, the future is bright with a lot of these youngsters.
Yeah, it is. It was very emotional. There were tears welling up in my eyes a couple of times. Very emotional. I'm glad I did it. I'll do it again next year if y'all have me.
Oh, you're locked in. You're locked in. Well, guys, gosh, what a pleasant surprise. Grateful for both of you. The kids are very, very special, but we can't do it. Like I told everybody when we started this thing, and Perk just made my – I held as long as I could, Juice, my team meeting. I told Perk – Perk definitely thought it was still the Mike McDaniel era the way he showed up for that team meeting. But I held the meeting as long as I could. It's just a showcase without the judges. When the judges show up, you know, you guys, they don't always like your scores, but they need you there, and it's meaningful to all of us. So thank you for the kind words. Grateful for that, for sure, sure.
If you're having trouble with judges showing up on time, you could just go just go digital again, you know, like you did when I was a judge.
That's right. That's when we had Savak in the house.
That 2020.
There's nothing like doing it in person.
That's right.
Yeah. There's nothing like doing it in person.
Yeah. You know, Savak was hiding behind the lens there, though, Big Seth. But get out there when the kids are there, listen to the poem. You know what I mean? When they're yelling at you and booing at you, that's what you need to see, Savak. You know what I mean? That's when you got a man up in there. You know what I mean?
Anybody can handle. It's like the pageant, right? He was in the pageant, like JT said about those those combines and pro days. So, well, look, I talked about the McDaniel era. Obviously, that is way in the rearview mirror now. And the Jeff Hafley era officially started. I guess you could really say it officially started yesterday. Or as he said, the first day of school. Half said it was like the first day of school. And, you know, the offseason program has begun for the Miami Dolphins and probably teams throughout the league. But it was the first time we heard Hafley, not like an introductory press conference, not doing the media tour, but standing up at the podium, and from the first question, he had to kind of learn, I guess, what the culture of that room is. And I thought it was interesting altogether. Perk, walk us through it. You were the guy in the building. I mean, all of us could have seen it, and had most of us probably have seen it on YouTube, but you were in the building. What was the first Jeff Hafley media availability like?
It was good. It was chill, but it was, you could feel the passion that Hafley has. So when Hafley was out in Phoenix at the owners meetings, and I wasn't there, I listened to the audio, and you could kind of tell that Haf just really wanted to get with the players. He wanted to get with his guys. He wanted to be coaching football. And I thought Tuesday he got a step closer to that. He met with the team for the first time, and you could tell that he was in his element. You know, I don't think that Haf, I think John Eric Sullivan is a lot more comfortable talking to the media and talking about what I want to do and this and that. I think Haf is a hand in the dirt, let's talk football, let's get out there and play football type of guy. And I think that on Tuesday, I saw that he was closer to that because he was in front of these guys for the first time. Players went off with offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams, position meetings. This is phase one of the offseason program. I think for 2 or 3 weeks, they're just doing meetings and lifting weights. But to me, I could kind of tell that Haf was back in his element, or he was a step closer to being back in his element.
Yeah, you know, Big Seth, I love that, too, about, you know, I remember that first day that, you know, when Jimmy Johnson came, you got to set that tone right away.
Yeah.
You know, you really do, and Jimmy definitely set a tone on how things are going to be, and I think that's what a lot of it was about, Perk, right? Like, you know, he wanted to set the expectations, the tone, every position coach setting up their ways, and the coordinators doing things like that. But you, like we talk about that kindergarten teacher, Big Seth, right?
Yeah.
You got to set it up stern early, man. Don't come in here like, you know, early and then try to get stern later, man. You know, lay the law down, let it know how it's supposed to be.
And I'll say this, one thing that I liked about Hafley, he talked a lot that they talked about accountability and you know, being on time and being responsible and being accountable to your teammate. And, you know, I'm not saying that that was missing in the last administration.
We're saying it, Perk.
Come on, man. We can say whatever we want now. We know now. Come on now.
You know, yeah, I think it's going to be more of an emphasis here. And I think that I get the feeling from listening to Hafley and Sullivan that this administration, this regime, this staff is more grounded in football reality. And that's, again, hand in the dirt, accountability, show up, play some football, don't worry about social media likes and all that kind of stuff. Show up and knock somebody off the line of scrimmage, and we'll take it from there.
I mean, that's what we need to hear. Did anybody ask him about his shoes? I didn't see Omar.
We're talking football, not shoes. Yeah.
But his first comment was about a hat, though, right? His first comment
It was Allen's Expos hat, right?
He was surprised to see that. Expos hat. Yeah.
So it was fun. Everyone has seen it, you know, the start where he asked and he started to get the first question from Allen, and everybody was like, whoa. And he got a little defensive there, which I thought was funny. You know, I took a lot away from that presser, and you can only take so much, and especially at this time of the year. But we see, how often have we seen, and we've seen too much of it here in South Florida with the change. Every time there's a change in coach, and it's almost like politics. We don't like the Republican president. Let's vote for the Democratic president. We got the tough coach. Let's get the players coach. We got the offensive coach. Let's get the defensive coach, because that didn't work out. And you see that happen all the time. I think it, and I don't know, I haven't done a study on it. It'd be interesting to see what teams fire an offensive-minded coach, but hire an offensive-minded coach because they believe in the system. They just think they got the wrong guy. And you had Brian Flores, who was just an absolute ball buster. He was no nonsense. He'd fight you to the death if he had to, even if he didn't have to, perhaps. His press conferences, it was like, I mean, you guys had to bring a crowbar to try and get anything out of him. And I was almost entertained by that. It was so difficult, those press conferences. And then Mike McDaniel comes out here, and he's very, you know, all the criticism, people said word salad. I thought in those 20 to 45 minutes that he gave you guys every time he got up to the podium, he really made an effort to try and give information. I really did think that he made an effort to answer questions, and I give him credit for that, even though I think there were times where he could have just taken the other route. But you know, he was took a completely different approach, and then of course also tried to be a stand-up comic. And I don't think Halfley is the exact opposite of Mike McDaniel. I almost think he's somewhere in the middle. He's got, you know, he's kind of got an affable personality, you know, he'll crack a joke here and there, but he mm-hmm. is serious. And I thought it was very interesting to hear him. So many of the things he said could have been taken or interpreted as anti-Mike McDaniel, like, or the opposite mm-hmm. of what Mike McDaniel would mm-hmm. do. I'm not going to come in here and tell you what my program is. I'm not going to get in here and throw quotes up on the wall. I'm mm-hmm. not going to do that, you know. What's important to you? Be on time and right. give everything you've got every time you're here. You know, none of those things are the things that we felt we ultimately saw in 4 years with Mike McDaniel. So I don't know how much he was coached up on what people felt went wrong, or those are just normal things that football coaches do. And Mike McDaniel was so counterculture that it just feels like it was the exact opposite of everything he brought to the table.
I think that Half is I think you're right. Half is kind of somewhere in between. Mike McDaniel was a football coach, but I think Mike McDaniel got too much into the entertainment aspect of the NFL. You know, the speed and the fashion and the social media likes and letting Tyreek have what was the YouTube guy, I Am Speed or whatever,
right?
Show up at practice and that kind of stuff. Half is not going to have that kind of stuff, and it's. It's just not his style. It's not the type of team he's going to have. And so I don't think it was being counter to Mike McDaniel. I think it was just him being him and Mike McDaniel was being Mike McDaniel. But again, I think Mike McDaniel was much more into the entertainment aspect of the NFL. Not that that's bad. You have to be winning when you're into that kind of stuff, and they weren't winning. So that's why Mike took the fall in 2024 and 2025. 2022 and 2023, Mike McDaniel was the most entertaining coach in the league.
Sure.
2024
yeah.
and 2025, when they started losing, it was like, hey, right. this dude is a word salad. He's not that funny, blah, blah, blah. So I think they were both being real. But again, to me, Halfley is just more grounded in football, like hand in the dirt, knock somebody off the line of scrimmage. That's more my style. I'm more Flo and Fangio than McDaniel.
Right, right. Well, I think half isn't having it, right? You know, right. he's and I think honestly, he's halfway between, you know, McDaniel and Flores. You
I
know?
See what you did there.
So half of that, you know. So I think that's important because it has to be a balance, right? There has right. to be a balance, Burke. You still got these new school kids that, you know, yep. love, you know, the new way of doing things, but yep. you also have to have an old school coaching mentality in order to get the best out of them, man. So I think that, you know, when you look at the Dolphins and what we've gone through the last few coaches, they went one way with Flores, they went another way with McDaniel. Now I think that they say, all right, we need to find somebody that's a little bit on both sides. But I think he might be leaning more flow than he is McDaniel when it comes to how he's going to handle that locker room, which is probably a good thing as well. So he's more center left, not politics, but you know, right. center left. No, and,
you're right. You're correct. You're correct, Juice. And you brought up an important point with talking about that. Look, Half is a guy who was just in college, right? So he was at BC, so he can kind of relate to these new school kids, but he's an old soul. An old football soul. That's what I get. So he's kind of got a hand in each pot where he was just in college. He knows about NIL and transfer portal and what kids want, but he's kind of an old football soul, an old school guy. So I think that's going to be a good blend, a good mix that's going to serve him well relating to players.
And he wants to relate to players. So I thought that was also kind of an interesting dynamic of when I'm talking about these polar opposites and then him being in between. I thought it was really, it wasn't quite fascinating, Juice, but I did enjoy the way he explained how, you know, they were itching for players to be in the building. And he said the building comes alive when right. players are in the building. And I couldn't agree with that. I couldn't agree with that more. Having worked in an NFL building for 8 mm-hmm. years, it's a different feel. Just those buildings are built to have football players in them doing football right. things. They're designed for that. The locker room has to have a certain vibe to it. The training rooms have to be active. The equipment room, those guys are doing, and you feel all of that. Now that building's a lot bigger, but when you're working in a building like that, you feel that energy. You know when there are meetings and there are coaches and there's the anticipation of having to be somewhere and be on time and don't interrupt those things. And you just, there's an action associated with it. I don't know if it permeates its way into the press areas, Perk, but man, you just feel it. Even if you don't have there's no player availability, you still kind of know that that building is operating the way it should be. And so I thought that was a cool statement.
And, except there's so much going on in these buildings. Yeah. You know, think about when we left Davie. When we left Davie, there was nothing going on in that building. Like you're talking about, kind of all season, like where there's nothing going on. But you said it, man. There's so many different things that are going on, and people are interacting with so many people. And there's no other sport where you need as big a building as you do when it comes to, except football. Right. You need a big building, and when a big building's empty with no players, I mean, it's like it's ghost town, and it's a tough deal. But for these guys, man, you know, to be able to go in there, like for me, I couldn't wait to get back out there. I couldn't wait for the first day of school. I really couldn't, man. You know, I'd already made my trip to Cancun. You know, spent 10 days there with my boys, kicking it. You know, we had 3 spring breaks that we overlapped in. Perk, you know what I mean? Make sure you catch. You know, SEC, Big Ten, maybe even Ivy League. You never know what you want, you know what I mean? But at the same time, though, you know, I couldn't wait to get back to work, man. And I think a lot of these guys can't wait to get back to showing proof in that building. So you're right, Seth, that I love a lively building, man. And new energy. I think it's going to be new energy. They're not coming back with the same old, same old. It's going to be new energy for everybody in that building.
No, you're exactly right, Seth and Juice, because – the league is about players, right? And that's the energy.
No one's buying coaches' jerseys.
Right, exactly. That's the energy that you need to feel all the time. And I can tell you, even as a media member, I personally hate the offseason. Hate it. Hate it, because it's just a bunch of this, a bunch of yapping. And you aren't going to settle anything for months. I used to always say about the NFL when it was a 16-week season, that it was 48 hours of action, right? 16 games, 3 hours per game. 16 times 3 is 48.
Thanks,
48
Bert.
Hours of action. Well, you know, I'm a math idiot. I got to break something down.
And he carried the one, too, Big Seth.
I didn't have to do it like this.
The 17th game just screwed up his whole thing, though.
It did. It screwed up my whole thing. But it was. It's just the NFL is built on talk, right? It's some little action, but you're so happy to have that action. It's so precious. So, when guys are in the building and then we just slowly ramp up to training camp and when pads come on and joint practices, and then it really means something. But this is the start. You need this buzz. I agree with you 100%. It makes the lead.
Let me ask you this real quick, Perk. I'm sorry, Big Seth.
No, go for it.
Let me ask you this, Big Perk, because you've had – Wow, he's big time when he's a 30th judge to show up out of 30.
He got the first ever standing ovation for a judge.
Yeah, we clapped him all the way. That means he's big time right there, man. 30 out of 30 getting there. You know, you've had some of these first day of school press conferences with some of these our last head coaches. I mean, quite a few of them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Where does his stack with you in terms of he can't do anything right now about, the X and O's. We won't know anything about what Half can do until probably September, maybe, late August. But how's opening presser right there? How did that stack up with you and what you guys in the room were talking about after he finished up?
Great question.
I think it stacked up very well. I think that because he gives that confidence of a football guy, right? I think that Flo did the same thing. Gase did the same thing. Philbin, not really. I wasn't there for the very first press conference of Mike McDaniel, but I'm an old school football guy, right? Defense, run game, knock this dude's head off. Don't apologize to him. All that kind of stuff. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, Jack Tatum and the Steel Curtain and all that kind of stuff. So that's the type of football that I love. And I get the feeling that that's the type of football that Halfley and Sullivan love. And so, I thought it gave off a great vibe. Again, I got the vibe that This is a guy who is very happy to be around players again. Like you said, Seth, the building is full, is buzzing, it's got energy. I thought that came through with half, that I'm around the guys again. Let's do this. And so that I got a very good vibe from Halfley.
Nice. Yeah, and let me say this, because Mike McDaniel took a lot of criticism for wanting to be the guy's friends. I didn't get that feel, and I guess we'll see how it'll manifest itself. But I didn't get the feel that, oh, the players are here, so now I can go compare watches and shoes and be their friends. I think right. He definitely wants to be in charge. I love the stuff he said about kind of cultivating leadership and showing people how to lead and recognizing when they do things that show that they're good leaders and supporting that and encouraging that and modeling it for them. I thought that was all cool stuff, but he wants to coach players. He's in the business to be right. with players and coach players. So I thought that was cool. There was one player missing. There was one player missing. And it is, perhaps the most important player to the Miami Dolphins 2026 season. Devon Achane was not there. Should we care? Is it just expected? He said that's just what happens this time of the year, which is what you should say on day one. If he's not there by day 15 or day one of training camp, then it's a different conversation. Juice, what are your thoughts? I'll start with you from the player's perspective. If you were there for off-season workouts, would you just think, hey, he's doing what he's got to do? Like, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a point in time when you don't show up. I think right now is the time where you probably want to be there with a new administration and really not doing anything that could jeopardize, I think, your ability to get the new contract or whatever he might be, the reason he might not have been there. I didn't hear him say it was excused or anything. A lot of times your coach get up there and say, well, we talked to Devon, he's not going to come. I didn't hear any of that. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. I feel like this, at some point Devon's going to get a contract. Probably he's not going to play football this year without a new contract. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. And rightfully so as well. Why should he go into his last – this is last year, right, Perk?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Why should he go into his last year and not get paid? And then he sees guys – he saw a lot of guys that were just mm-hmm. in that building get paid before they had to go into their last year. And he knows his value to this football team. Now, with that being said, be careful out there because, let somebody come up with two first-round picks. I would hate to lose Devon Achane, but if Perk, you tell me, Savak, Seth, you tell me, somebody say, hey, we'll give you two first round picks for him. We got to let it ride, right?
Yeah, that's hard.
We got to let him ride. But I'm just saying, though, I think for him, it's probably, hopefully, it's a little business decision right now, but don't hold out as a, I don't know if you want to hold out in phase one. You know what I mean? Phase one seemed like a little bit early time to be holding out. And I know work can be done. And I know, like we talked about, it's mostly classroom and workouts, nothing too much football stuff. So I just think that, but here's the thing, though, Seth, this, man. I don't put my hand in anybody's pocket.
Right.
Keep your hand out of my pocket. So if it's a business decision, I'm all for him making a business decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Understood.
Yeah, now, Juice, I think you raise an interesting point because, I'm all for Devon Achane. You're a 191-pound running back. You better get your bag when you can. You don't know when your career is going to end. On the other hand, you should probably show up for day one of the new administration and let them know that football is more important to me than getting paid. Devon Achane is not that type of dude, though. I think this is more about business. Nobody doubts his love for the game. He's taking advantage of a business opportunity and trying to maximize it when he can. I think that's smart on his part. I won't get nervous until he starts missing full pad two-a-day. I mean, a full pad training camp workout two-a-days. How old am I?
Forget about those.
Full pad training camp workouts.
What are those?
Joint practices. Like two of us going to miss some joint practices. I think that's when the team starts to miss you because you really learn. That's when I would worry. Until Devon starts missing full pad training camp practices, do your thing. You're a running back. Get your bag when you can because your career as a 191-pound running back is probably shorter than anybody else's career on that team.
That's a great point. But he's also 191 pounds and hard to touch. and catch. He is. If you're elusive, 191 and elusive is a little different than 191. And, you know, I mean, I'm just 191 right. for no reason. And, you know what I mean?
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, I haven't seen 191 in a long time, though. No doubt. So I was going to ask a different question, but I'm looking at the chat and someone brought up Troy Aikman.
Yes.
And you know, made news. What, have you seen him around the building? I'm assuming he's not around the building.
No, but I'll say this. He's not. I tried to tell y'all, but go ahead.
Okay.
He's been, you know, he's been on two podcasts saying that, you know, he's interested in the Dolphins. He's got a vested interest here. And I did ask Jeff Hafley about Troy Aikman, and I was kind of surprised by his answer that he said that, yes, I've consulted with Troy and I continue to consult with Troy. And so, you know, you wonder, you know, what did Troy, we think that Troy was instrumental in the John Eric Sullivan hire because he was on the selection committee. We think that Troy was instrumental in the Jeff Hafley hire, again, on the selection committee, and said that he had talked to Half and he was very impressed with Half before, you know, just as a ESPN analyst to defensive coordinator, he was very impressed with him. I would guess that Troy Aikman endorsed Malik Willis, but you wonder how heavy is Troy Aikman's influence here. If Hafley has said that he's talked to him since being hired, what is Troy consulting on? Is he consulting on the first round pick? Is he consulting on Ty Simpson? It raises interesting questions. I'll say this also, I'm all for it. I like getting an outside voice in because what you had been doing before was not working. So you bring in Troy Aikman, you bring in Daniel Sillman, who is Ross's son-in-law and Steve Ross's son-in-law, and a sports, you know, he's a member of the relevant company, a CEO, I believe. He's got some sports experience. I like bringing in the outside voices. I like Aikman being there.
So Mike Oliva says the more Troy Aikman, the better. Here's the question. It does raise a lot of questions, and I have a few of them, but here's my first one. Where the hell's Dan Marino? Like, who's asking Dan Marino? Is anyone consulting with Dan? Like, the guy
I don't think Dan wants
there?
To do this.
Yeah.
But Dan's got a job there, too. Dan was on the selection committee. Why? I don't understand. What, and if we're going to talk about quarterbacks, are we not also asking Dan Marino?
Now, John, you know what? And OJ, you know this better than me, and Seth, you do too. I think Dan wants to, you know, shake hands and kiss babies.
I don't think you're right.
He wants to put in the 12-hour day?
I don't know that he wants to put in a 12-hour day, right. but Dan is up there.
Troy isn't either, though. Troy ain't putting 12 in either.
Dan's the guy in the building.
It's not.
Like Dan Marino's the guy in the building. Dan Marino's the guy who helped you build those darn facilities when it's time to go ahead and open that facility. So I'm not anti-Troy. So Mike says, okay, Dan hasn't been traveling around the league for 15 years, going from team building to team building. No, but I have sat in those production meetings. I don't know that makes anybody a better evaluator of talent or understanding how to build buildings. They make friends and kiss babies and do all that stuff too. Now, I will say this, they probably evaluate more film than Dan is evaluating because he's got to watch games and understand what to expect. And look, Troy Aikman, very bright guy. Clearly he wants to do this. I just find it very interesting that you've had Dan Marino on the payroll, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I don't want to step into something that I shouldn't step into. But I think that if you're going to consult one guy, you got another guy who's right there as well who also has a lot to offer. That's what I'm saying. And maybe he is being consulted. I don't know. I also think it's interesting that Troy Aikman is saying these things on podcasts, but who internally is supposed to answer for that? Who for the Miami Dolphins? You asked that question, Perk. Who can you ask that can say, help me define Troy Aikman's role with this team? Is he going to have a page in the media guide? When the Dolphins 2026 media guide comes out, is Troy Aikman going to have a page there as special consultant? I'm just really interested to know. And it feels like it's in the shadows if you look through a Dolphins lens. Mm-hmm. But Troy Aikman's like, hey, the Cowboys didn't ask me. All right, let's go. Go Dolphins.
Right.
Go Dolphins.
I think it's a win-win having both of them, bro. I really do, man. You got two dudes that know ball, you know? We're talking about how we love old school football. You know, we're talking about how we love the way the game's supposed to be played. You can't tell me those two together doesn't. A lot of times, what I love most about all this, guys, a lot of times a head coach is intimidated by having two guys like that in the building. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want, you know, the hell, we've been wanting Jason Taylor in the building. They were afraid of Jason Taylor, I think, in my opinion. That's my opinion, in the building, because, you know, you got a dude that's smart as hell, knows the game, mm-hmm. tough as hell, coaches his ass off, you know what I mean? And this is for, you know, for Mike, shit. Damn,
sleeping, man.
I was getting caught up. The chat's going.
But it's 38 minutes in. It's your first one, Juice.
Yeah, so that's what Mike said. I had to get on it.
Supposed to come in heavy hand.
Yeah, so it's like, yo, so it's good to have these guys, these football guys, you know, in the building that the head coach, they're not worried about anything other than coaching, but they don't mind the influence that some of these guys are in the building. You know, Uncle Dan, they never, two of them called him Uncle Dan.
He did.
You know what I mean? Like, all of them called him Uncle Dan. So, I just think that a guy like Dan Marino and a guy like Troy Aikman bring so much to the table. And if guys respect them, but see, here's the thing about it though, too. A lot of these kids in the locker room right now, they only know Dan Marino from Ace Ventura. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't know anything about Troy as a player. All they know about Troy is on TV.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way they are right now because it's been so long since they played. I'm talking about the 90s, man. You know, these kids, most of these kids weren't even born until the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, so it's interesting to see how Danny's not, you know, being talked about a lot and Troy is, but I love the dynamics. We all can agree that from the hiring Sully to hiring Half and all these things that Troy and Danny were a part of, I think they've collaborated pretty well. So we'll see how big a part. Now, did anybody ask that, Perk? Will he be a part of the draft part of it all?
No, but I do wonder about the power structure and how Sully feels about it. Yeah. Because if Troy is in here, you know, and Half is talking to Troy, Sully is, I don't know. Maybe Sully welcomes it. Maybe Troy is not a threat. Maybe Troy is a threat to a first-time GM, right? Who isn't secure in his job yet, hasn't been through a draft, hasn't been through a season. I just want to see the power pyramid, and I have asked about it, and that's why I asked Halfley about it. I'm very interested about Troy Aikman's role. How does Marino feel about it? What is his influence on the draft, on decisions throughout the season, on the final 53-man roster? I agree with you, Seth. Is he going to have a page in the media guide? Is he an advisor, a specialist? But, you know, does his role differ with ESPN? I mean, there's a lot of questions to be answered here. But I do think that it's a positive for the organization overall. I just think there's probably – they might have this thing worked out, and I might just be the nosy media member who has – who shouldn't know all this stuff anyway. What does it matter? Why do we have to tell you? But I'm curious about it.
Well, you can't walk in a name that big and not expect people to want to understand it, particularly when that name that big keeps talking about it. So I think you're, it's every bit of your right to ask that question. I mean, it would be silly to, in my opinion, to just ignore it. It's Troy friggin' Aikman, you know? Yes. And you have Danny Marino. Yeah. Like, they're both there. How could you not want to understand it? I will say this, though. Where's Van Horn? That's so good. I will say this, that John Eric Sullivan does not come across to me as a guy who does not feel comfortable or is concerned or is looking over his shoulder. I think he approaches every day like, I am making the decisions here.
Right.
I am going to consult everyone. I value what everybody brings to the table, but the buck stops here. And I just think that's the approach he's taken. And I love that about him. And I'm not trying to throw shade, as though I know it's a very popular thing for Miami Dolphins to do, but because I like the man personally and worked with him personally, it's very different than what we felt we saw from Chris Greer. At least from an outside looking in, right? You know, there is no doubt about who's in charge, in my opinion, from you know, day to day building that football team. It very much seems to be John Eric Sullivan from everything we've seen and the way he's carrying himself. But I am intrigued by the Troy Aikman dynamic, the Troy Aikman Dan Marino. And I'm not, I hope I'm not projecting that there's some beef between those two guys, because I mean, those guys have incredible respect. And I think Troy Aikman would tell you Dan Marino was his hero growing up. So, you know, I'm not projecting that. I'm just intrigued by the entire dynamic.
Yeah, and I think Mike Oliva asked a great question too, man. He you know, when you ask, will Troy be in the war room? That's a great question. If Troy's in the war
room. I've been told that he will be.
Yeah, that's a big thing here, in my opinion.
Yep.
So Danny's going to be in the war room. Yep. See him on the clips, but if both of those guys are in the war room, why would you be in the war room if you're not helping make a decision in the war room? You know, right. I mean, there's no point being there. You could be at a watch party somewhere just kicking it.
Like can you imagine if you walked into a watch party and Troy and Dan were at the watch party?
I would be. Well, they got me working on that Thursday at the wharf. We'll be at the wharf for Fort Lauderdale, by the way, for 2 hours. I don't want to, you know.
They pulled you back in, Juice?
Man, Seth,
damn,
I'm supposed
my phone didn't ring.
I'm supposed to be on the West Coast. I know, Big Seth, and I hesitate to even tell you, man. They brought me back in, man.
I'm officially on the. That tells you what they think.
Man, 11 please. And 30, Juice. That's going to be a good party. It'll be a good watch party. 11. And
well,
30,
if they don't move out of it, then it could be. What if they move the 20? I got to be on the road, Perk. I got to be somewhere. I gotta get to the West Coast of Florida.
I agree with you there. That's a nice place to be.
Yeah,
nice place to be.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
good stuff. Oh, go ahead. Who was that, Savak?
No, I was gonna say I look forward to the draft. And you know, I don't know which way the Dolphins are gonna go, whether they go offensive tackle and with number 11, I should say, whether they go offensive tackle if Francis Malinoa from Miami is there, whether they go cornerback, Mansoor Delane, the kid from LSU. I think it's too early to go edge rusher. I think the best guys are gonna be gone. Reese and Bailey, Reese from Ohio State and David Bailey from Texas Tech. After that, I think there's a drop off. So maybe you go wide receiver, you know, Mekhi Lemon. If Carnell Tate is there from Ohio State, I like him. What's my kid from Ohio State, Tyson? Jordan Tyson.
Jordan Tyson.
I like that wide receiver also. So I would think they go cornerback, offensive line, or wide receiver at number 11, and then we see what they do at number 30. You could get an edge rusher at number 30.
Nice. Nice. I'm thinking all wide receivers for all the picks we have.
Of course.
See which one works out best for Malik. You know what I mean? I think that could be the best formula, Perk. You know, but
that was the Mike McDaniel formula, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Man. And they got to run at least four
running backs something. And receivers. Yeah,
two something. It can't be, you know, that's it. Lighten the ass, you know what I mean? But just be able to run, you know.
Yeah,
but
the draft strategy is going to be interesting. I don't know what to expect at 11 or 30 because there's no precedent. I think we would have had a pretty good idea with Greer and Mike McDaniel based on four previous years. They were emphasizing the trenches the last couple of years at the top of the draft. But we'll see with these guys. It's going to be very interesting what they do at number 11.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, too, because I know that, you know, Half had a lot of great things to say about the young guys that are on the defensive line that we have from last year. He feels like those guys, he wants to see more.
Trust them.
You don't trust them, huh, Perk?
I would draft a defensive tackle. And look, I think Jordan Phillips has the best potential out of them all. The fifth round pick, Kenneth Grant, the first round pick, Zeke Biggers, the seventh round pick. But I think it's kind of one of those things where if they don't bite as a puppy, they might not bite as a dog. And so I'm going to draft a defensive tackle. I know you got Zach Sealer there, but I wrote just yesterday, I wonder about Zach Sealer if he fits into the rebuild. He's going to be 31 on September 7th. Next year, he's going to cost $20.7 million on the cap when he'll be 32 at the season opener. Does that fit into the rebuild, a team that's really looking to get younger? So I would probably draft a defensive tackle. I don't assume improvement. I know the biggest improvement a lot of guys make is from year one to year two, and they always say that's the reason is because going into your rookie year, you train for the combine. You're training in 40-yard dash and bench press and shuttle run. After your rookie year, you actually train football stuff, the defense and the offense that you played in as a rookie, so you make a bigger jump. But I still don't assume improvement. I'm drafting a D tackle. And what's the worst that can happen? You have too many D tackles?
Well, how high, though?
Yeah, that's a question.
I would
I don't think
round three or four, because I want because I want somebody who's going to contribute. You know, Jordan Phillips in round five and Zeke Biggers in round seven, that's nice, but that's not somebody you expect to be an impact player. That's somebody you expect to be a rotational player. If they're an impact player, that's a nice surprise. I want to get a impact player third or fourth round, probably.
Interesting. Very interesting. I also thought you were the one who asked him about, you asked Halfley about Sealer, right? The tweener.
Yeah, I did.
I thought his answer was really good. And it sounds to me like he's very excited to have him this year. I thought it was pretty cool to hear him explain what he felt Sealer does well. But you also bring up a very good point and described the exact type of player that John Eric Sullivan gets rid of. And maybe not this year, but it doesn't sound like next year.
Sealer has no chance next year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not at that number.
Well, he has zero chance at that number. I mean, correct. That's just not.
No chance to that number.
Correct.
Yeah. At that position and that, yeah, no chance.
Yep. That's what it sounds like here. Well, we're going to jump into, I tried to tell y'all in a second, but I just want to bring up really quickly a little Finn condition update. We dropped a new episode today. We focused on my 1981 Topps Nat Moore card, autographed by Nat Moore.
Mr. Moore.
Yeah, it's a special one for me. So signed by Nat. A lot of fun episodes. And Finn Condition right now is on the Apple Top 100 charts for hobby podcasts in the United States. So appreciate everybody who's listening to it. And in Mexico, we're on the top charts in Mexico as well. With Emilio and the crew. Got on the UK charts today. So they're loving us up in the UK as well.
We worldwide, Perk.
Man.
The hell you talking?
Did you collect cards as a kid, Perk?
Yeah. I told you. I got a whole collection. I got a shoebox in my closet. I probably got an OJ McDuffie card. I collect it from.
I don't believe it till I see it.
Right.
All right. I'll have to. Actually, I probably don't because you know what? I collect it from the mid 70s up until the early 80s. So there's probably like a six or eight year span. And I've got a couple of them from the 2000s, from the 90s and 2000s. But yeah, I'm mostly 70s and 80s.
Okay. Hey, Seth, real quick. I know everybody's heard of them. I'm going to give these, at some point, everybody can DM me. Don't put it on the page. I don't think I allow you to post on my page, but I'm going to give away some tickets for over at TGL this weekend.
Okay.
We got a master watch party on Saturday. So I've got like four passes, man. Courtesy of my man, Mark Gundry, with Whole Life. And he's also a Keller Williams, real estate agent. But he gave me some passes, man, for this event this weekend. So it's that thing, Tiger Woods, Perk, what it's about. Mm-hmm.
Indoor golf up in Jupiter.
Up in Jupiter, man. CGL, so man. I've got four passes, man. It's going to be very interesting for me to go in there and see what it's all about. I guess the first few guys are people that, DM me on any of my socials. They hit me up all the time when they want to talk shit to me. There we go.
I heard it's lit up there. I heard it's a great atmosphere. Dave Hyde, our columnist, went there. He said it's a great atmosphere. So I know a couple other people have been up there. So jump on those tickets. That's a good deal.
And Big Seth, when are we doing our drawing?
So I was going to pull it Friday. I'm glad you brought that up. So you have an opportunity to win the prize possession in this giveaway that we're doing. Is the OJ McDuffie 1993 Upper Deck rookie card signed by OJ McDuffie with the inscription Air Slops? It's a one of one. There's only one of these in the entire planet. The OJ McDuffie Air Slops rookie card. Okay. And if you don't know what that is in reference to, go back and listen to Fin Condition episode number two. You can learn all about it. Also, I'm giving away not the shirt I wore, but the same model of shirt that I wore in episodes 1 and 2. And it's a Dan Marino Mitchell and Ness t-shirt. It's a $60 MSRP t-shirt, unopened, still in the bag. Okay. So it's not the sweaty one that I wore. And now
OJ's also worn Seth Levitt jersey.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't think anybody wants that. Clearly iHeart doesn't, probably nobody else. But so there's that t-shirt. And then now these tickets that OJ's given up. And all you need to do is tweet at us that you are following Fin Condition, right? And not on the socials. You need to be following Fin Condition on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or on the Fish Tank YouTube channel. And now Fin Condition is also available right here on the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel as well. So Fin Condition is blowing up everywhere. But if you show us that you're following one of those three channels, you'll be entered to win. You get an entry for each and every one that you're following. So you can have up to three entries. And we're going to pick some winners here on Friday, Juice.
That's right. Man. That's right, man. Am I eligible to win?
You can win those tickets. Right. You also
got a ticket, man. I want
David Fernandez wants to wear the green hat that I wore in that. Yeah, you don't want to wear that green hat. The sideline boy hat. Oh, I'm man.
Yeah, maybe I need to give away something too.
Get something, man. Get something in there. Yeah, absolutely. And Perk is giving away his old router that he used for the
So I switched to Verizon. I had AT&T, and so AT&T, when I cut off the service, they told me they were going to send me an email and tell me to take the router back to UPS, and they'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like 5 days after I stopped the service, and I call them. I'm like, I haven't gotten this email. They were like, yeah, you can keep the equipment. We don't need it.
You want the router? You got to do it.
They know.
Hold on.
They already know. They're like, no, you can keep that cheap crap. Right. No.
Wait a minute. Right. If you still have that router, we're gonna come up with something creative where somebody can win an autographed Chris Perkins shitty ass router.
Yes.
We gotta do it.
Yes.
We gotta do it. All right. We gotta get Sam Marcoux involved in this promotion.
For sure.
Too good. All right. So those are the contests. Go check them out. Gentlemen, I need to know what you tried to tell us.
Juice, all right, I'll start off. Yeah.
Go ahead, Juice.
I tried to tell y'all that the Big Ten is the sheet.
Uh-oh. Oh, he wouldn't let me have that one.
See, yeah, I wasn't going to let you have it.
There it is.
In the 2025-2026 school year, the Big Ten is the big bad bully on the block in Division I college sports. As of today, the Big Ten holds the college football title, Indiana, the NCAA wrestling title, Penn State, well, who's actually won 13 of the last 15, but who's counting, Big Seth? You know what I mean? So wrestling's always been dominant in the Big Ten the past 20 years. The women's hockey title resides in the Big Ten with Wisconsin, and the first African-American woman on the national team, Layla Edwards, from Cleveland, which is Big Seth's old stomping ground.
Green Road, baby.
That's right. And just recently, NCAA basketball championships, UCLA women beating Dawn Staley in the powerful South Carolina, and Michigan men beating up on the team that was top dogs the past 5 years in UConn. And who knows what's going to happen in lacrosse and soccer and all the other sports that I don't give a damn about. You know what I mean? Now, football has been owned by the Big Ten the past 3 seasons. Michigan, Ohio State, and the previously mentioned Indiana. You know, blame the portal, blame the NIL, but the playing field is finally even now, Big Seth, and that means more good players are bypassing the SEC and coming to the Big Ten. That is why this draft season, the Dolphins just think Big Ten first, then SEC, then ACC. I mean, 6 of the top 12 players are in the Big Ten. That they're projected, right? I mean, granted, most of those guys are from Ohio State. But who cares, Big Seth?
Who cares?
Who cares?
Oh,
it's going to be a Big Ten draft block party this upcoming draft. Half and Sully, listen to me. Think big, go big. Go Big Ten. I try to tell you.
All right. Well, that felt like a commercial, but that was good. It was definitely it was well thought out. It was well thought out. There it is. Savak, what'd you try to tell us?
Well, first of all, I don't understand how everybody doesn't have an O.J. McDuffie card, considering that man had like 80 of them friggin' things.
Did you see that one guy? He had about,
He had
like 50 cents on that. I made about 50 cents on all that.
But all right, guys, all right. I tried to tell y'all, and I apologize for saying this again, because I know we're tired of hearing it. Trust the process. Now, I know we've heard it for two decades straight, like a broken record, echoing through the nightmares of every long-suffering Miami fan. At this point, it's less of a slogan and more like a sleep paralysis demon that's whispering in our ear in aqua and orange, you know? And yet, here we are, being asked to buy in one more time. But this time feels different. Not in the usual, just squint a little and you know, the kind of way and you'll see it. But the potential actually feels tangible, real, like something that you could reach out and grab, instead of another mirage shimmering over Hard Rock Stadium. Now, I know Big Seth pushes back on the whole Packers on South Beach idea, but honestly, it's not an insult. It's a blueprint, and a proven one at that. And we all know about Sully, but let's not gloss over the fact that the two teams that just met in the Super Bowl, both front offices are rooted in Green Bay DNA. John Schneider cut his teeth as a top aide in Green Bay, climbed the ladder, took over in Seattle, and now he's sitting on his second Super Bowl ring as GM. Elliott Wolf learned the ropes in Green Bay, sharpened his blade in Cleveland under John freaking Dorsey, who's going to have to change his name to that because I'm not going to stop calling him that. And he just helped turn New England back into a legit contender in 2 years flat. And Dorsey, come on. You guys already know how I feel about Dorsey. The man builds monsters for a living. He was handpicked by Andy Reid, another Green Bay product, by the way. I bet most people don't realize Andy Reid was just an offensive line coach all the way up for about a decade until he made it to Green Bay. Now, there is a pattern here. Now, whether people want to see it or not. Now, I could run through Dorsey's resume again, but I already did that on my own channel, so go over there to Fearless Savak and run that back if you need a refresher. But here's the point. We won't truly know what we've got in Coach Hafley until the ball snapped and the bullets start flying. But Sully, there's enough smoke to believe there's real fire behind it. Because here's the truth nobody wants to say out loud. There's no classroom for being an NFL GM. There's no degree, no certification. You learn by being in the room. Watching, absorbing, failing, and adjusting. Sully learned in Green Bay, an organization that doesn't just flirt with success, they sustain it. Meanwhile, Miami's last regime, let's just say their teachers weren't exactly valedictorians.
Damn.
So yeah, one more time, trust the process. And if this thing hits the way it looks like it might, give it a few years. Half the league is going to be scrambling to build the Dolphins North or Dolphins West or whatever. And when that happens, just remember, I tried to tell you.
Very nice. Nice. Well-researched, rooted in the process. So very nice, Savak. Juice, I might jump Perk and save him for last because he said Troy Aikman's part of his I tried to tell y'all, and I kind of don't want to. I want to hear that. So I'm going to go, if that's okay with you, Kurt.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, so, well, Mark Clayton turned 65 years old today. So happy birthday, Mark Clayton.
Yes.
And anytime I see the name Mark Clayton, I tried to tell y'all that that man belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. My creative writing here isn't particularly creative, but it doesn't need to be. I'm just going to read some names to you. Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, Steve Largent, Chris Carter, Harold Carmichael, Cliff Branch, Fred Biletnikoff, Charlie Taylor, John Stallworth, Marvin Harrison, Calvin Johnson, Sterling Sharp, Raymond Berry, James Lofton, Drew Pearson, Andre Reed, Tim Brown, Isaac Bruce, Michael Irvin, Charlie Joyner, Art Monk, Andre Johnson. Every one of these men that I just named are Hall of Fame wide receivers who did not turn receptions into touchdowns at the rate that Mark Clayton did. Calvin Johnson, Harold Carmichael, Charlie Taylor, Fred Biletnikoff, James Lofton, Bob Hayes, Andre Johnson, Raymond Berry, Art Monk, Cliff Branch, Bobby Mitchell, Sterling Sharp, Michael Irvin, Charlie Joyner, John Stallworth, Crazy Legs Hirsch, Lynn Swan, Drew Pearson. They're Hall of Fame wide receivers who caught less touchdowns than Mark Clayton did. And I could do this all over and over and over again. Largent Brown, Bruce Berry, and a whole list of other guys, Hall of Fame wideouts who had less double-digit touchdown seasons than Mark Clayton. And I'm going to give you two other names, Randy Moss and Jerry Rice, perhaps the two greatest wide receivers in the history of this great game that we love. And they are the only two men who had seasons with more touchdown catches than Mark Clayton's 18 in 1984. That's it. When the only two guys who are better than you are literally the best two who ever played, and maybe two of the best football players who ever played the game, perhaps you should give some credence to what Mark Clayton did on a football field. And if you are just saying, oh, you're just an old guy who likes old guy stuff, let's talk about some of the best receivers in the game today. Who are the best guys today? Is Justin Jefferson, would he be on the list of the top five receivers in professional football today? Well, his touchdown to reception ratio is 13.8. Mark Clayton's is 6.9. Every 6.9 times Mark Clayton caught a football, he scored a touchdown. Justin Jefferson's doing it at a rate of 13.8. Mark Clayton had 582 receptions in his career. Justin Jefferson has 579. We're pretty close there, right? Apples to apples. Guess how many touchdowns Justin Jefferson has? 42. Literally half of what Mark Clayton has. And the same amount of catches, Mark Clayton doubled Justin Jefferson's touchdown catches. What are we talking about here? How about Ja'Marr Chase? His ratio is 9.6. He has 54 touchdowns and 520 catches. Very impressive, but it ain't 84 touchdowns. What about Amon-Ra St. Brown? There's another guy. 12.4 is his ratio. Only 44 touchdowns with 547 receptions. And these are modern-day players with modern-day rules. It is absolutely insane what Mark Clayton did at 5'9" in 1984 in the 80s and the early 90s. And I get that he has the greatest pure passer to ever play the game as the guy who threw them the ball. But that should not diminish his greatness. If you don't believe me, you can go watch something else, my 9-minute video that I did in terms of what you know what I think. But I'm going to bring it up every time because it's Mark Clayton's birthday today. Happy birthday, Mark Clayton. You belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I tried to tell y'all.
Yeah, great stuff, man.
Nice. Good stuff. I agree.
Yeah. His ass was out there watching the lawn guys this morning. I called him this morning, Big Seth. He was watching the lawn guys do the lawn. He was sitting on the porch drinking lemonade and smoking a cigar. So
he should be.
That's a good life.
As he should be.
Yeah. All right. I guess I'm hitting cleanup here.
So
Troy Aikman is gaining influence in the Dolphins organization. And I tried to tell y'all that this was going to happen. I thought that this was going to happen as soon as Troy's name came up, that he was going to gain influence. I think the two strongest people that are gaining influence in that organization are Brandon Shore, the salary capologist, and Troy Aikman, whose role hasn't been defined. But I do like that the Dolphins have gone to Troy Aikman. I do like that Steve Ross has gone to an outside voice. Troy Aikman is somebody who has won titles as a player, as a quarterback, the most important position in the NFL. He's somebody who has made a lot of associations around the league as an ESPN analyst. He talks to all these players. He talks to all these coaches. He talks to executives. He knows what's going on in the league. I think this is a good move by the Dolphins. I think this is a good move by Steve Ross. I think it shows a willingness to break with some of the stuff that they've done in the past, where they've been kind of an insular organization. Yes, they've gone outside sometimes, but pretty much they rely on their same guys. I like that they have gone outside the organization. They've gone to Troy Aikman, somebody who knows what it should look like. And it sounds like they are tapping him very seriously as far as information on who should be the GM, on who should be the head coach. We know that Jeff Hafley told us on Tuesday that he has talked to Troy Aikman a few times. Now, you do wonder where the Aikman influence came from. Why Troy Aikman? As Seth said, what does Dan Marino think about this? As I brought up, what does John Eric Solomon think about this? That's stuff that we can resolve later. Right now, I know that Troy Aikman is gaining influence in this organization, and he's excited about it. Troy Aikman has talked about this on two separate podcasts, how he's been influential in the Dolphins, how he's going to be rooting for the Dolphins. Troy Aikman is somebody who is shaping the future of the Miami Dolphins. I think that's a good thing. Troy Aikman is gaining power in this organization. He's going to continue to gain power in this organization. I tried to tell y'all.
There it is.
Okay.
And Troy is gonna, his name is gonna be heard a lot more. His face is gonna be seen a lot more.
That's good stuff right there, man. Great job, gentlemen. I think that right there, Perk, man. I mean, it's we're seeing it over and over again, like you guys both talked about today. There, he's been talking about it. You know what I mean? And I think
Troy's excited.
Yeah. That's what's up right there, man. I think you see some of these other players probably that have been doing big things with these organizations. And, you know, why would Jerry Jones not have him in the building?
That's the big conversation, right?
You know what I mean? Like, it's too late now, though. He's ours now, Jerry.
But you know what? People are saying that about Steve Roth. What about Dan Marino? Why'd you bring in Troy? And then Tom Brady is out there, you know, doing his thing with the Raiders.
Right.
I don't know.
Matt Ryan now.
Matt Ryan. I think these are good things because it brings in, new voices. Now, look, Troy hasn't played since, the 2000s, we know, but he's still somebody who has had his hand in the league. And the same with Matt Ryan, the same with Tom Brady. So I think it's a good thing, but I do wonder the origin of the Troy Aikman involvement. Did you ask Dan? Did Dan give his approval? Did you go over Dan? Did Dan say, I don't want this? Maybe we're not entitled to know this as media members, but I think fans, people who pay their dollars, are entitled to have some of these answers. So that's really kind of why I asked the questions. I think fans who pay their money to this organization are entitled to know something about the power structure. Not everything, but more than we know right now.
That's an interesting point there. Entitled to know? I don't know. I don't know if we're entitled to know or not, but we certainly... It would be ridiculous to not understand that the curiosity would be there, you know.
Right.
So they have to recognize that the curiosity is going to be there. And if they didn't think that was going to happen, then they completely misread the room, because you cannot sneak a name like Troy Aikman into the building and assume nobody's going to, you know.
Right. And I can imagine that Dan's not cool with it either.
He's got to be cool with it, right?
I can't imagine he's not.
Dan Marino off in that fashion. Correct. Like, I'm sure Troy is going to be in the war. He's going to be pictured in the war room on draft night, April 23rd, in that first round. His face will be shown probably right next to Dan Marino, as they were at the introductory press conference for John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley, right? They were sitting side by side. It'll probably be something similar on draft night, I'm guessing, but still, you kind of have to wonder about the dynamic and what everybody thinks about it and how it came to be and were the correct, was protocol followed? Did you give Dan right of first refusal? Do you want this job? Do you want this role? Because we're talking to Troy. I hope it was done that way, the right way.
Yeah. I'm sure it was.
And I think it was. I agree with you, Juice. I think it was.
All right. I don't know if there was any more. No, I just didn't know. I think you guys grip and run. I think I'm going to shut up and listen. But great stuff. Great show. Another way to fill up an off season here Never a dull moment in Miami Gardens.
Oh man, great stuff, man.
And we didn't even get into Raheem Mostert. But that
we'll no, we did. We didn't get into Rod all.
Man, we did not.
Don't go out like that.
No, I don't know why.
You're better than that. You're better than that.
He is, man. He really is. It's sad, bro. It really is. But it's nice to hear though. What's going on though? I love the source. I hate that he was the source. I wish it had been somebody else, but damn.
Right. It's a good source. He was right there.
Hey, at least he put his name on it.
He wasn't anonymous, was he?
Back. He put his name on it. Awesome stuff, guys. Next Wednesday, I don't know that we're going to – well, it's your call, Juice. I've got Louder Than a Bomb Florida individual finals. I will not be available, and I've pulled Chad Van Horn in to be one of my judges. So if you guys got it, we'll make an announcement later.
Yeah,
but
we'll figure it out.
Available.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Yep. We'll figure it out. But hey, we do appreciate everybody coming out tonight, and definitely thanks for diving in.
Dive up in that fish tank. Who that? Sitting down with Seth Living. Seth. OJ. Juice Man. Ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans. Yeah. Dolph fans. Number one. Of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank.